What's the name of your drash? Pick your promise. So is that a suggestion?
Yes.
Pick your promise. Is a command? What? It's good to note that, but I didn't think that you actually thought it was your commandment. So what do you think? You think God wants you to pick a promise? Think He wants us to pick all of His promises? The ones that He makes to us, you think He would like us to leave some of them out? Hard to think of every one of them at the same time, right? I think when you imagine the kingdom coming in its fullness, in some real sense, maybe you're thinking of all the promises. But how many promises have you picked? How many promises are your promises that you have them? Been promised to you, you know it, you know. I don't mean just like conceptually, something was promised. I mean, like there are kids who are promised something by their parents. They know they have it. Even though it's not in their hands yet, they know it. And then there are kids who, you know, might wonder, well, yeah, I've been promised things before. But it's possible to grab hold of a promise and really, really have the thing, right? So let's see. Jerusha quoted, dying is the only way to come alive. What do you think of that? You think that's true? And let's see. Elijah's an interesting guy. I sympathize with people who despair. Sometimes I criticize them. Some critiques are fine. It depends on the nature of the critique, right? But I have also gotten mad at people at different points in my life, you know. Gotten mad at them because of what they were saying or seemed to be, you know, what they were declaring, or just the way they were speaking about things in general. Getting mad at somebody isn't the same as, you know, you could exhort someone. Sometimes you could admonish someone, but that's not the same as getting mad at them. Like when Moses lost the promise of the promised land for himself, because he got mad and spoke out of his own mind, right? So there's a difference. And so anyway, I just want you to know, I may not know what you're going through. If I don't, I think I sympathize with you anyway. But in some cases, I do know what you're going through, and I do sympathize. And it may be that I don't always seem sympathetic. Maybe I should repent. I don't know if I'll ask all of you to just shout out now every time I've seemed unsympathetic to you. Maybe that'd be more than I could bear. But you could come and talk to me. Anyway, so I'm thinking about, I think it all sort of fits together. Pick your promise. Why would somebody pick a promise? I mean, why would somebody bother to pick a promise? Because they want it and what? For hope. But whether or not you pick the promise, what determines whether you actually pick a promise? What? So if you pick the promise, it would probably come from something about believing the promise. What? But does people sometimes not want to pick anything because they don't have any hope? So that could be problematic then, if you won't pick a promise because you don't have enough hope to pick a promise. Yeah, you are certainly in need at that time. What? Pick too many? All at once? Maybe. So anyway, I'm thinking that it all has something to do with expectations. Don't you? You ever give up on something? No. You've never given up on anything. Hallelujah. But you felt like it. You've been tempted. You've been sorely pressed. Yeah. See, I still to this day I claim I've never written any human being off. I have been sorely tempted. But I believe I can to this day honestly say I've never written anybody off. Nobody. And I have some pretty compelling reasons to be tempted along the way to do that. I actually think that it's not something that can ever be justified when looking in God's face to have written anybody off. So I find that to be kind of compelling when I think about it, you know. Anyway, I'm thinking about expectations, and I actually think about them quite a bit. I have probably most of my life, and I don't have time to really go into what I was thinking about, but I'll try and touch upon a little bit of it, and then maybe we'll build on it at some point in the future. But in this week's Torah portion, you know, first of all, we have Phinehas. He's given God's, in the Eskayim Chumash, the phrase is God's pact of friendship. A covenant is given to Phinehas because of what he did. He was jealous for the Lord. Now, I think that and it says he made atonement. So if Phinehas had expected nothing, barring that anyone else might have done something, if he had just sat there, how many Israelites would have died? He did, in effect, get between the dead and the living, just like Aaron did at one point, right? I don't actually want to focus on the fact that he ran a spear through two people with one thrust, particularly, but he stopped the plague, right? I don't think he did it because he hated anyone. I think he did it because he was jealous for God. And in being that and in taking action, he saved many lives. That's the part I want to focus on, like Sergeant Private York, right? He killed people in the war. He was a conscientious objector, right? Am I got the right guy?
York, but he ended up as a sergeant when he started.
Oh, yeah, okay. And, you know, but so finally, you know, when he actually killed people, it was because he realized that what he might do would result in far fewer deaths. And fewer people died because he killed the people that he killed. And he was confronted with this occasion where he had to look at his own conviction against killing and make a determination about, I mean, I'm not saying this necessarily was his thought. Well, I think it was his thought process. Basically, he came to the conclusion that inaction would be killing more people. Isn't that more or less right? So the thing is, Phineas saved lives by doing what he did. And the two that he killed, I think we could say, as far as that goes, they were already dead. There wasn't much of a chance for them. Phineas expected something when he did what he did. He expected a holy God to act as a holy God, and I think he understood that something had to be done to change the situation. So he wouldn't have done anything without expectation. And he's given this pact of friendship with God. But I want to look at some other things about expectations. At this point in the Torah portion, a census is taken, right? And is there one verse that you can think of when it talks about the census that is sort of really, it really punctuates things when you read it? Can you guess what it is? Well, the verse is actually, I believe it's 14, chapter, well, no, I'm sorry, chapter 26, 64. Take a look at that if you have it in front of you. I'll turn to it quickly here. 26, 64. So it says, and those who, oh yeah, 64. Comes to the end of the listing of the census, and says, these are those who were numbered by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who numbered the sons of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. But among these there was not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest, who numbered the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. And that, it, to me, that verse really strikes me when I read it. And do you know why? Why aren't any of those people there? Well, it is true that they're not there because they died. I cannot contest that. So, in the 14th chapter of Numbers, it says this, the second verse, and all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. And why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So, they're invoking death upon themselves, their wives, and their children, right? Can you tell me after that what they expected? It's very mysterious. I mean, think real hard. What were they expecting? They're expecting to die. Now, what happened to them? Wow, it almost seems like there's a connection between what they expected and what they got. It's a novel thought. I could be completely wrong, right? Oh, but then I remember, I'm trying to convince myself that expectations have some power, but I'm thinking, oh, how could they, right? But then I remember, oh, there were two guys that didn't expect that, that tried to encourage everyone else to expect something else, to expect, like, blessing and promise. Like they were saying, hey, everybody, pick a promise! And they even told them what it was, right? But they wouldn't pick it. And they all died because they wouldn't pick the promise. They had to declare that death was coming, and death is what they got, because death is what they spoke, and death is what they expected, and you know what? They died! But the two people that spoke differently, you know what? They crossed the Jordan. They were still there. And what did they expect? In a word, yes, they expected the promise. And what did they get? Wow, it almost seems like what they expected had something to do with what they got. Could it possibly be the truth? Maybe my theology has just gotten all screwed up. Could expectations have any power? So, it seems like they do. It seems like they have power. I'm out of time. I'm just about completely out of time. The thing is, why did Abraham leave his family, his home, the land he was from? Why did he leave it? God asked him to go. So he must have expected something. Now, if he had not expected anything, do you think he would have left? When God asked him to sacrifice... What? When God asked him to sacrifice his son, the one upon whom everything that was promised hinges, what did he do? Some commentators criticize him for being too quick to obey God. But he gets up really early and gets on the journey. He's about to do it. What? We don't what? What don't we know? It's clear, actually, that he didn't, because of what we learn in the writings of the apostles, right? That he supposed that God was able even to raise the dead, right? So you see, the thought of death for his son did not limit his expectation of God. He expected the promise to be kept because he knew God to be a keeper of promises, and he had chosen those promises, and so even if he had sacrificed his son, he did not believe that was going to be the end of the promise. He expected God to do what God had told him that he would do. And he acted based on what he expected. And I tell you, you just try to prove to me that if he had expected other things and not expected God to do what he said, just try to convince me that it would still be the same story, that he would still have received what he received. And in fact, he expected to receive what he hadn't exactly received, right? He expected to receive Messiah Yeshua. And that's like, it must have been at least 10 years before the Messiah came that he expected it, right? Somebody laugh or tell me I'm full of something. Even longer than 10 years. I mean, he saw way past his own life. And that was what his expectation was based on, was that what he saw way across time. Beyond when his descendants had been enslaved and set free. Beyond all of that, all the way through, he saw to the end of it. He saw my day, Yeshua said, and he rejoiced. And that's all about, I'm telling you, it's about expectation. Without expectation, it has no engine. There's no gears. There's nothing that will move the thing forward without expectation. It guts the whole thing. If there's no expectation. You think God has expectations? Messiah Yeshua gave up his life. He went to the cross. What, you think he was expecting anything?
What we see as expectations, God sees
as certain. Well, no, but the thing, yeah, I agree, but the thing is, if we're expecting something, that doesn't mean we're not certain, does it? Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure we're clear on it. What?
That's the nature of hope.
Right.
That you are serving.
So the thing is, God doesn't change at all. He never changes. But what happens with us experientially is governed by our expectations. And our expectations are governed by who we actually think God is and what we actually believe God is like. And we can form expectations. In fact, I've heard many, many people speak in a way that God isn't going to do such and such and things are going to be like this because... And you know what? That seems like it goes that way for them. It seems is kind of a mild way to put it. If it's true that life and death are in the power of the tongue, so many of the scriptures say that. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. What the tongue forms comes out of the head, and what we declare has to do with what we expect. Just show me somebody that speaks not according to their expectations. Try to find me somebody. I mean, I'm not talking about people that are lying, knowing they're expecting other things than what they're saying. There are many of those people, but see, they're still speaking according to their expectations. It just may be a mystery to you what they're actually up to. People don't consistently, at any rate, speak in a way that defies their own expectations. I mean, we're bundles of contradiction,
like
right?
I'll never get an A on this test. But they study, and they get an A. You know, if they really didn't believe they could...
So they're overcoming one expectation with another.
Right.
Right, they're replacing... Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've all struggled with that. It's like I'm going to do it. I can't do it. And then you fight past it, and you do it. Yes? Withhold his will?
Yeah.
Well, did he withhold his will from the people who died in the wilderness?
I don't know.
They withheld his blessing from themselves by excluding themselves from it with their expectations, right? God didn't change his will. He didn't change his blessings. He didn't change what he was going to do with Israel. He just said, well, if you want to get off of the bus, you know, if you hate this bus, if you like the old one, if you really think death back in Egypt is better, you know, I'm not going to force you to be blessed. You can choose something else. And they did. And they declared it with great emphasis, right? Death on their kids, death on themselves.
But so. I mean, it almost seems like if what happens is based on our expectations, like, wouldn't that mean that we almost have, like, more power than...
Ah. Well, I'm glad this came up. I didn't say that we can expect God to be a different God and he'll change for us. Right? You didn't hear me say that, right? See, the thing is, we study God, right? We listen to God. We study his word. We try to understand him. He gives us revelation. He speaks to us by his spirit, right? We begin to understand some things about him, right? Then we have to choose whether we will form our belief and expectation based on what he has shown us about himself or based on something else, right? Are you following me?
No.
Okay, you're teaching some kid to play an instrument, right? And you would like them to expect that they can learn to play it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you always would like them to expect that, right? Have you ever noticed that if you meet a kid that really doesn't expect to be able to do anything, it seems to be harder for them to do it?
Yeah.
But their expectation that they'll fail doesn't change your expectation that they can play it, does it? And so in this limited sense, you know, it says in the scriptures that God made Moses as God to Pharaoh, right? I am right, so you don't have to answer. There's a very limited sense in which you can think, well, in this situation, you're as God to the student. I mean, you're the guy with the qualifications. You're the one that knows how to teach, right? So you hand things down to the student, and the student will progress if they do everything that's handed to them from you, right? If a student will do what you ask of them, and they have faith that you can teach, and then they expect it to work, does it work? Okay, let's just say you were perfect and you had all power to make people into wonderful musicians if they would only believe. Then what would be necessary in the student to progress? Belief. So I thought I was going to be able to answer your question more quickly, but state the question one more time.
If we're not believing that God's will is going to happen, will people be open to His will?
Are you asking if I don't believe that God's kingdom will come, that I have the power to stop it from coming?
No.
Okay, good, because it's still going to come whether I believe it or not. Okay, so are you at, what are you asking then? Well, the answer without going through all the details is this. God makes promises. God says what He'll do. And if we expect God to do what He says He'll do, and we believe Him, see, there are a lot of things that are opened up for us in our life that will happen because we expect God to be the way that He is. There are things that will not happen in our life if we do not believe God. And Israel did.
You know, there was a possibility that those people, if they accepted that they could go in, could have gone into the promised land. That possibility was defeated by their disbelief.
So if God promises that if you sow, you shall reap, if you sow, you shall reap. But if you don't sow, shall we expect to reap? So, but if we don't expect to reap, will we sow? But it's unlikely, isn't it? How many people that actually expect that nothing will ever grow? Nothing. Nothing's going to, not even sprout. How many of those people go out and plant anything? I've never met one. Well, we can try to create exceptions to everything, but look, okay, so look, theoretically, somebody could absolutely believe nothing will grow and still plant, right? But if they do, there must be something causing them to still do it. There must be some little shred of something. But if there are such people, okay, but the thing is, if you don't expect something to work, and you're sure that it's not going to work, that doesn't inspire hope in a person to go and do the thing, does it? See, normally if I expect nothing out of a certain process, I would rather involve myself in some other process. Why do something that I'm going to get absolutely nothing from? So, anyway, we will continue with this whole subject, and we can talk more about it, but thing is, Joshua and Caleb expected God to make good on His promises. They did, in fact, pick His promises. And they crossed the Jordan, and none of the rest of that generation of those men that spoke that way did. So the expectations of one, here's the beauty of it. Decide what you expect, and then, you know, I figure, well, that must be what a person wants, right? Even when it sounds bad, it, So it's kind of like they're speaking what they want, right? Everybody got what they wanted. Pick what you want. You know, God will let you have a bad thing if that's what you're intent on having. But in the case of us, see, he'll discipline us. So in the end, if we are his children, and we are, he'll discipline us. So he will change those rotten attitudes and false perceptions and false things that we sometimes say about him along the way. And that will open up the path of blessing for us, even though when we're expecting no blessing and getting very little because we don't expect God to bless, he keeps working on us. So eventually we begin to become people that do expect a God who blesses to actually bless. It is a reach. But we get there. It can be very painful and very disturbing. And it can become really, really, really peaceful at a point when we begin to let God be God and let us be his children instead of trying to be God some of the time, at least. You know? So, yeah. Yeah.
And it's not through power. So he'll give us the power to say those words, and with whatever little bit that's there that we want, even if we feel like we can't believe.
Even in Elijah's despair, when God gave him something, he acted on what God gave him.
There's something more to your question. Let's figure out what it is during the Onik. So, Father, I thank you. I thank you for everyone here. I thank you that Yeshua sympathizes with us in our weakness, and we're all weak, and sympathizes with the struggles that we have, intercedes for us, and will receive what he's seeking from you. And because of him, we can seek you and receive as well. I ask you, Father, just to confront all of us, to challenge us about what we expect and whether or not we're expecting you to be who the scriptures reveal you to be. And in any hurtful thing that you might find in us, Lord, we ask you to help us with it, to help us to come around to agreeing with you and expecting you to do what you say you will do, that we would come to a clearer, cleaner, more peaceful understanding and a hopeful expectation of what you have guaranteed in your Son Yeshua. By his blood and by his resurrection, we thank you that you are working marvels here in each of us. And I want to proclaim your blessing upon that in each person, your blessing upon each person here. And I thank you for what you're doing. And I say, may the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his countenance to shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav v'lecha Vehunecha Isa Adonai Panam Belecha Yasem Lecha Shalom.